The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we're going to answer several emails, actually, we've gotten recently. One of the emails is on risk level of a retirement portfolio. I've also got an email with a Social Security question. Actually, I think several questions rolled into one email. And we also have an email regarding LTC, long-term care insurance. So we will cover kind of a wide range of things this particular show. Good afternoon, Jim. Do you have your microphone on?
I do.
Excellent. I'm glad it was off when your iPad was making little chiming sounds. But
see, I use my iPad electronically now, and you hassle me.
It works silently, too. You just have to flip that little switch. It's so easy.
Nah, mine doesn't work that way. There's no switch.
They didn't do the switch anymore?
I don't. If there is, I don't know where it is.
Oh. Because on your iPhone, there's the little switch. I thought the iPad still had the switch.
It is working perfectly, though, right now, as my easel.
Perfect.
Because I printed out the emails. I do want to give an apology. We have three emails we're going to get today.
At least three.
Oh, we only have three. I can't find the other one.
Oh.
That was what I was going to apologize about. Welcome to the Retirement IRA Show, folks. Those in Northern Colorado, this is quickly approaching September. When the Northern Colorado show will be reduced down to 1 hour. The radio station is on board with that. In fact, I'm supposed to be going out with Brady, I think, this week. Today is Tuesday. This is going to play on Saturday. Today is Tuesday the something, and it's going to play on Saturday the something. Do you know what today is?
Today's the 15th of August.
Okay. So today is Tuesday. It's playing Saturday the what?
19th.
Okay. But I'm supposed to go out with Brady from the radio station sometime this week, I think on Thursday, to finalize everything and sign a new contract with them. I like going out with Brady because he's big into sports, mm-hmm. and he hates New England Patriots. So we have a good ribbing at because he does the sports show on KFKA.
Mm-hmm. He does.
And he's a big Broncos fan. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he knows I'm a Pats fan, so he gives
makes
the
for due, lively conversation.
He gives due respect, though, to the New England Patriots, but he makes it perfectly
well,
clear.
If they certainly have earned a certain level of respect. It doesn't cause people – respect doesn't necessarily cause love to happen.
No, he doesn't love them. He makes that perfectly clear. But anyways, we're going to wrap all this up, folks, and beginning in September, for our Northern Colorado listeners, you will have a one-hour show. It'll still be Chris and I. excuse me, and Justin will come on every now and then, affectionately referred to as Junior. He'll come on the radio show every now and then as well, talk about taxes. And Pete, I bumped into Pete Scott on this retirement thing with Pete. Totally into it.
Oh, now he's into it?
Oh, my God. He refused a client. I told him, I says, hey, I was talking to someone. I want you to help this because, you know, before he, quote-unquote, retired, I'm still going to work with your clients, Jim. He just looked at me flat out and said, nope. I was, huh? I thought he was joking. I said, huh? He says, nope, I'm not taking on anymore. I said, but, he says, no. He didn't even let me finish.
Good for him.
I was like, wow, you're really taking this retirement serious. He said to me, he looked at me and he went, I got used to it. So he's actually liking this retirement thing. He's not missing work too much.
Wow. Well, good for him.
So good for him. But he did, I knew I'd get him on the show. I said, oh, so I guess you don't want to be on the show anymore. And he says, well, I didn't say that. I says, well, you didn't want to take on a client. He says, that's work. The show is fun, and I'll go on anytime you want.
Oh.
So I said, really? He says, yeah, absolutely. So he is in Indiana for a wedding this week. He comes back this weekend. He's not getting married, but someone in his family is. So him and Mrs. Pete went out to Indiana. But he will be back on the show probably the following week. I think I'll bring him in. We haven't had Pete on do some estate planning and some other things. And we'll have to rib him on this new retirement thing. He's totally into it.
Is he starting to grow a beard or anything?
No, he's still got the mustache. Hmm. But totally into retirement.
No ponytail yet? He's not riding on a Harley?
No. You're talking about Pete. He didn't even go
He didn't even
go to Woodstock, he was there.
I didn't think that he'd ever actually truly retire, so I thought this new Pete might be all changed physically and mentally.
We'll see. But hopefully longtime podcast iTunians and Northern Colorado.
That sounds better than podcastians.
I was going to say podcastians. iTunians will be excited that Pete is going to claw himself out of retirement, come back on the show, and do some more work with us. I want to get Jan Lord back on, too. I have some...
I like her shows.
Yeah, I want to get her on about Medicare and special needs trusts again. So I want to get her back on the show. So and with Pete, we can get Jan on easily. Because they're really good friends. Mm-hmm. Okay, so today we've got three email questions.
Oh, before we get into that, just real quickly, what do you have planned for the eclipse?
I'm going to go outside and look at it. I got to get those glasses, too.
Mm. I might have an extra set I'll bring in.
Okay, because I read a Consumer Report article from NASA. NASA? NASA? How do you say it? Mm-hmm. NASA or NASA?
NASA.
NASA? Telling you the brand, to be careful. There's a lot of fake glasses out there. And they did recommend the glasses sold at Walmart and 7-Eleven.
These came from Walmart, ones I have.
I was at Walmart. I couldn't find them. Where are
they? Well, they're probably
gone. Oh, they were hidden. I couldn't find them anywhere.
But I bought a bunch of them a while back because as it approached, it would be difficult to get them. So.
Okay, well, yeah, if you have an extra pair because everyone in the office will want to borrow it.
I think I have.
Okay.
Extra.
I'll go. I went to the Walmart in Loveland. I couldn't find it. I'll go to the one down in Longmont and see if I can find them there. But anyways, I'm not going to do anything. We're going to go outside, look at it, and then go back to work. I know you're taking the brood up to the old Shinding and Casper, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have, I don't want to say his name, but we have an iTunian from Pennsylvania who is coming out to Colorado. He's got a hotel in Loveland. And he is going to, remember you read his email and you recommended mm-hmm. he take 85 to 80 and head in that way because they predicted, I was watching Channel 25, Fox predicted 600,000 cars on I-25 heading north into Wyoming. I don't know who made that prediction. That's a hell of a lot of Coloradoans.
Yeah, that's not going to.
That seems way too high, 600,000 cars.
I saw estimates for 400 to 600,000 people. So not cars, because not many people, they're going to go up in groups, right? People are going to carpool up there. But only about a half to two-thirds coming up from Colorado. The rest are going in from other states. But still a lot of people.
This gentleman, longtime radio show listener, is going to come out, staying in Loveland, which is a city just south of us, for those who don't know, about 20, 30 minutes from our office. And on his way back, he's going to stop in and say hi.
Very nice.
So hopefully you'll be here for that. And that's enough. We had a Texas iTunian stopped in and said hi as well. And a Marylander iTunian stopped in and said hi as
really?
Well. Yes.
Just were out here?
Mm-hmm.
visiting.
Yeah. So we had someone from Texas, Maryland, and this would be now Pennsylvania. Should we have another map?
Maybe we should have a special kind of star when people physically visit from other states. We could use the same map, just
a different star.
Maybe a different shaped star or something.
We could do that.
Or puppy, little puppies or something.
Encourage more people to visit the wonderful state of Colorado. All of them kind of threw in. The gentleman from Maryland was on his blizzard quest. He wants to eat a blizzard in every state. From Dairy Queen?
Dairy Queen Blizzard,
yes,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So when he was in Colorado eating his Blizzard, he stopped in to say hi. Mm-hmm. And did you know there is no place in Vermont? I think I mentioned this. There's no Dairy Queen in Vermont.
So he's
going to buy one in New Hampshire.
And drive across.
Drive across and eat it in Vermont. But that's his quest. The Texas.
Do you suppose Ben and Jerry's has some kind of influence and they've barred
perhaps there's no Dairy Queen because of Ben and Jerry's. but the Texas people were on vacation, and then of course the Pennsylvania iTunian is going to go look at the eclipse.
Nice.
Okay, well we encourage our iTunians to reach out to us. You can email us like these three iTunians did, sent us emails. We're going to answer these three email questions on today's show. I do want to give a special shout out to the gentleman we believe was New Hampshire. He sent me an email. Mm-hmm. I told you about
it. Yes, and teased me with it because we don't have that star on the map.
I cannot find it. And as you know, it's not my fault, listener. We've changed email providers or did something. And I told you all my emails were gone.
Out of your trash bin, out of your deleted folder.
But that's where I put things when I didn't want them in my inbox.
We heard about that last
time. You're the one who taught me that there's another thing called archive folder, which I did not know. So all my deleted email, which is where I used to store my emails, are gone. And I can't find the printed one. So for our iTunian from New Hampshire, we're not ignoring you. Could you send me the email again? It should be in a sent folder. Just resend it. And this time I'll do something with it where I guarantee I'll print it.
Or send it to Jim. I'm sorry, chris@jimhelps.com.
That would work.
And I'll make sure it gets handled.
Apparently Chris knows about an archive. How many people knew there was even an archive folder?
Well, I think most people know that if you put it in the deleted folder or the trash bin, it's going to go away.
No, mine never would. They stayed there forever until I emptied it. I just never emptied it. But when we updated the email, it started emptying itself, and I lost it. So anyways, for our New Hampshire iTunian, I do apologize. If I can find the printed one, because I usually always print these and put them next to where my iPad sits, and then I lean them against the iPad as an easel and read them. And it's worked flawlessly up until this moment. Okay. Let's get to...
Email numero uno.
Numero uno. We'll get to this one, not the Social Security one.
Our show's bilingual now.
Yeah, that's about all I know. This email came in August 9th, so not too long ago.
Recently than the New Hampshire email.
Yeah, because the other two came in. One came in August 1st, and the other came in on August 3rd. So this one came in August 9th. It begins, "Hi, Jim and Chris." So he did remember you.
Excellent. Good start.
It's a good start. "I just started listening to your podcasts, and I like them. Basically, my wife and I are getting ready to retire in less than a year." What if he doesn't give me his current age? All right, I guess that won't matter with what we're going to talk about. "Retire in less than a year, and we were thinking of utilizing a simple portfolio mix that my wife and I can manage ourselves." So clearly, Raymond, not Raymond.
Raymond?
I have no idea who Raymond is. Chris. What? It just, whatever name is in my head comes out. So what he's getting at, Chris, now you made me lose my train of thought.
Something he can self-manage.
Oh, he's a do-it-yourselfer.
Yeah.
Okay. So he wants to do it himself. He doesn't feel like hiring anyone and paying them to manage his money.
Yeah.
Okay. So a good do-it-yourselfer. "We recently read Tony Robbins' book called Money Master the Game. I had heard he wrote a financial book, but...
I haven't read it yet. I've seen it.
He's not a financial guy. He's a motivational speaker. He's a celebrity. But
he's amassed money.
He has amassed a lot.
So maybe he's learned...
Maybe he has. I heard he referenced a lot of professionals who helped him write the
probably
book, obviously, yeah. And he credits them in there. He's not taking mm-hmm. credit for it. But no, I have not read the book. But mm-hmm. apparently, this reader did. This listener did. Okay, and inside the book, it gives a highly recommended, what they call retiree, quote unquote, all weather portfolio asset allocation mix to use. And he says inside the book, it was recommended by, and I'm not going to put their names, a couple of people who wrote that part of the book, I guess. I'd like to know, have you read this book? And what is your take on an all weather portfolio? Thank you for your thoughts on this topic. And he placed the portfolios in the email. You can see them here. There's two all-weather portfolios. I'll let you see them in a minute. I'm just going to read what's in them.
Oh, you're going to say what's in them?
It's only indexes and not individual investments. So the first portfolio, which is the all-weather, more aggressive portfolio, has 20% in U.S. stocks, 20% in international stocks, 10% in emerging market stocks, 20% in real estate investment trusts, 15% in long-term U.S. government bonds, and 15% in TIPS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? TIPS, for those who don't know, it's not, hey, psst, here's a tip. TIPS are Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, TIPS. They're a type of bond. Mm-hmm. So essentially 30% in bonds. And as you'll notice, half of that in a very aggressive long-term bond. The second all-weather portfolio that's a little less volatile has 30% in stocks. And this just says stocks, no breakdown, just 30% stocks, not saying how much in U.S. and foreign, large or small. 7.5% in gold, 7.5% in commodities, 15% in intermediate bonds, 40% in long-term bonds, and that's the allocation there.
Mm-hmm.
So what he was asking, Chris, is our opinion of both those portfolios. And my answer to him is going to be, we're not going to give you one. I'm not going to analyze those portfolios and give them my opinion. My opinion, first of all, is there is no such thing as an all-weather asset allocation of, here, retire, buy this, and just hold it, and you'll be fine. I don't think that exists. I think you have to constantly monitor your portfolios and decide, should you rebalance? Should you reallocate? Is one asset class out of favor? Would you be better off in another? Should you hold 40% in long-term bonds in one portfolio and 15% in another in a rising interest rate environment? Should you not be perhaps a little proactive and have the ability to move to a shorter duration bond if interest rates are going up?
I think the first question or the first comment before we even dissect the specific.
Oh, well, I wasn't
being infected by you, Jim.
I didn't want,
I
know.
The specifics of these portfolios is this approach to asking this question first, because this is his opening volley to us. This is, now, maybe he has done, there's a lot more to his planning than this, and this is maybe the final step. But this isn't the first question that a person should be asking
exactly
for retirement, because actually this fits right in one of your mantras.
Exactly.
Right?
What's How can mantra? I tell you what to do with your money until I know what your money has to do for you?
Right.
Everyone's That's where I was going with this.
Different. Oh, did I cut you off?
Well, you did. See, you know me. I take a circuitous.
Circuitous.
Yes. I was close.
You were close.
I was damn close. That's like 80% there.
Yeah. And there's not even N's and M's in that one.
No, but
so
hey,
I know you could got.
I
you
got
could
it.
Have gotten there.
Circuitous.
Yes.
I took a more circuitous route mm-hmm. where I really was trying to tell him I don't want to analyze the portfolio because there's too many questions there. But instead, I was going to tell him back up. Before you buy the portfolio, make sure there's a plan in place. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to talk to him about and the listeners about. I think also you would agree, Chris, as you look, because this is the first time you're looking at the email now, you're probably thinking the same thing I'm thinking. It's not so much the portfolio, it's risk capacity. How much of his portfolio should be invested and how much should be prepping for spending? Because he's retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And how much does he need to spend? How much should be in secure income? How much should be in variable income? How much should be at the risk of the market? These are the things I would want him and that I'm going to spend the next 15, 20 minutes talking about. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, this comes, I think, naturally from people's focus while they were saving. They were have been focused for decades, maybe, as they accumulated assets, investing it over time in their, many people put them in retirement accounts, their 401k or their IRAs or whatever it might be. And in that case, the big focus is, okay, what am I invested in? What should my portfolio look like during this time? How much should I be putting away? And those are the major questions. Once you're in the retirement phase, there's all complete different set of questions. You
Absolutely.
Have needs now. Your assets, your resources have to meet those needs. And you have to look at all the resources you have. Your investment portfolio, your retirement portfolio is just part of that. Now, it's possible this is the only asset he has. Not
that
likely.
That we don't know. He hasn't told us.
Not likely, because he's got to have either, well, not got to. He probably has some type of Social Security, possibly, some kind of annuities or pension income. Those are still on the table. No mention of those in here. The degree to which those cover the needs that you have in retirement are a huge contributor to this discussion of
Absolutely.
Where I should put the rest of this money.
Absolutely. And that's what I wanted to tell him. He definitely put the cart before the horse in this scenario where he started. And it very well may be that he has the plan in place and he's just at the point in time where he has to choose the portfolio.
Yeah, if he said, I've got all this other analyzed and I've got X amount of secure income coming in that's going to meet all of my basic needs, and if I had to, I could live off of that for the most part. And this is just the amount that I want to have invested over my entire retirement lifespan. He didn't say that.
No.
But if he was, then maybe he is at the point of picking between these two portfolios if he's narrowed it down to two that he likes. Glancing at them and having you describe them, there's absolutely nothing inherently wrong with these portfolios.
And there's nothing unique about them, nor is there anything overly wrong with them.
No.
They are aggressive, especially the first one is quite aggressive, I would say. And again, here's a case, and Chris nailed it. I have to assume he doesn't have a plan, because I think he would have began with the plan. Hopefully, I figured he would have began with, we've done some planning. This is the money that we have earmarked for investments throughout our retirement. I am 65 years old. I probably won't need this money till I'm 80. What do you think of these portfolios? If he began that way, that tells me a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a case of someone who I think is still steeped mentally, he's a do-it-yourselfer, steeped mentally in accumulation planning.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fun part, picking out what to buy and watching it grow, add to it. A stock market drop for them is a buying opportunity. When you are retired, living in a retirement portfolio, those are distribution rules, as Chris said, totally different. So what I want to get him to concentrate on, and all our listeners, we're going to forego talking about the plan he needs to put in place. Longtime listeners will know Chris and I believe in establishing what we call your minimum dignity floor, a level of minimum living standards that are going to maintain a lifestyle throughout your retirement as you age, allowing you to age with dignity. We've talked about that. We talked how I came up with this idea in my 30s when I used to live on the East Coast. We talked because I bought a woman strawberries in a grocery store, Chris. She couldn't afford them. And she told me later I didn't know who this woman was. She told me she was 78 years old living on just Social Security. And if I didn't buy her the strawberries, she wouldn't have any. And I thought to myself later, as I think of this woman, And I shared this story with you when you first started working for me, that this is why we're going to establish a specialty in retirement planning and come up with our process, Chris. We want to make sure no one can't afford strawberries. So when we come back, what I want to get him to understand is, as you design a portfolio, let's just assume you took care of everything and now you're at the portfolio spot. You have to determine how much of your assets are going to be invested, how much are in cash, and how much are in safe accounts. And that is a concept that we call risk capacity. and we'll share that with him. I think he has to pay attention to risk capacity more than asset allocation.
So when we come back, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935 as we take a look back to the year Social Security started. Actually, the 82nd anniversary was just yesterday, August 14th, specifically, of 1935.
Happy birthday.
Was the signing of the Social Security Act. So we're going to take a listen to a song from the Boston Pops Orchestra, directed by Arthur Fiedler. So we'll find out. I don't think we've had this one on the show before. So
do we have cake for this party?
No, that was yesterday.
Oh, we could have still had cake today.
So we'll be back with you in just a moment.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. I had to let that play until I got to the point where everybody would recognize it. This has been used a lot.
I still don't recognize it.
Really? It was in Mel Brooks' silent movie. It was in Death on the Nile.
This is the Boston Pops, though?
This is the Boston Pops. Playing this. One of the few fine, fine things to come out of the state of Massachusetts.
I came out of the state of Massachusetts.
There's a few things. I'm not going to say which few. Boston Pops, that's some good stuff right there. Anyway, that is the Boston Pops, directed by Arthur Fiedler. And this was actually originally a tango written by a Danish composer, Jacob Gade, in 1925, but wasn't recorded until 1935 by the Boston Pops Orchestra. So in the year that Social Security started, 1935... this fine, fine composition was released to the public by the Boston Pops Orchestra. So I've seen it a lot. Whenever there's two people dancing romantically, they sometimes play this. This in this day and age, it's usually in some sort of dramatic comedy or something like that. But it's been in a bunch of movies.
Okay.
You're just going to have to trust me on that.
I trust you.
Okay. So getting back to our email, we had an email question where the listener had essentially sent us two hypothetical portfolios, or at least
Tony Robbins book.
Yeah, but it isn't even a portfolio. It's just a recommended asset allocation. The difference between that, a portfolio would identify specific investments that are in there. Asset allocation just talks about the sectors or the asset classes that you are going to be invested in. So there was a couple recommended portfolios in Tony Robbins' book that he is looking for an opinion upon those. And as we revealed in the last segment, you may or may not actually be to that question. We're actually questioning his question. We're not sure he should be asking this question quite yet.
He should ask it, but maybe not yet. And what I want him and all our listeners to know, as Chris just said, the portfolios he provided to us were asset allocation. They weren't actual investment portfolios. Tony Robbins' book doesn't say go out and buy this investment, that investment, and the other investment. It's saying allocate your money across these asset classes: domestic stocks, international stocks, emerging markets, real estate investment trusts, long-term bonds, intermediate bonds, gold, commodities. These are just asset classes. What I want our listeners to understand is in retirement, it's not just asset allocation that's important. It's retirement allocation. It is actually segmenting your money. We call it mental accounting because you're going to mentally put money in certain pools or buckets. It's sometimes called the bucket strategy or the pooling strategy. I've also used the analogy of the hulls of a ship. You have multiple hulls on a ship to keep the ship from sinking. You should have multiple retirement allocation, multiple pools of money to keep your retirement from imploding and sinking. So whether you want to use the euphemism of multiple hulls on a ship, multiple buckets, multiple pools, you're going to mentally account and start segmenting your money. Not just asset allocation, but retirement allocation. And the whole idea of this segmentation and this retirement allocation, folks, is to create a concept Chris and I called
the secure retirement income process.
No. My mind just went blank. Wow, that's dangerous. I mean, I was thinking, and then it was just gone.
It just suddenly stopped?
Risk capacity, it's back. It was gone.
I'm glad it's back.
It's back. Mm-hmm. Well, this would have been a very boring segment. I would have been, risk capacity.
Did we come up with that?
I've been calling it risk capacity.
We've talked about it for a long time,
many,
but I don't
many
remember
times.
Where it
many, many and times.
Where it
I learned
from.
It somehow. I don't know if I read it or learned it at Boston University when I was studying retirement planning and financial planning, but risk capacity is a measure that we as retirement planners place far more emphasis on than risk tolerance.
Which is what investment advisors concentrate on almost completely.
Exclusively, almost. Yeah. Risk tolerance is what you pay attention to during the accumulation phase. When you're not spending from your portfolio listener or all listeners, risk tolerance is all you need. Are you going to freak out when your portfolio is down? Mm-hmm. Hopefully not, especially if in your 30s, 40s, maybe even early 50s, early to mid 50s, you're not freaking out if your portfolio is down because retirement may still be far enough away, the period of time when you're going to need your retirement money, that a drop in the market is truly a sale. If your favorite pair of pants, Chris, is on sale 30, 40, 50% off, you're going to go buy them. But when stocks are off 30, 40, 50%, a lot of people don't like to buy them. So we try to get our clients to understand in the accumulation phase or in a retirement allocation portfolio, bucket three or hull number three can be invested and take advantage of markets that are down. But hull one or bucket one and hull two or bucket two, not so much. Those have different purposes. So risk capacity, though, is a measure of risk tolerance. Speaking of risk tolerance, risk tolerance is your emotional reaction to risk, folks.
Right.
How would you react to a drop in the value of your portfolio? Not how would that affect your lifestyle, just how would you react emotionally? You're going to lose sleep, you're going to start freaking out, or you're not even going to look because you don't even log on to check your account balance. You don't know what you have in your 401k until you get your quarterly statements. So where are you going to fall in between there? That's risk tolerance, very, very important during the accumulation phase, very important to asset managers. Risk capacity is extremely important to Chris and I because we're retirement planners. Remember, I said this before, there is a difference between an investment advisor and a financial planner. As financial planners who specialize in retirement planning, Chris and I pay attention to risk capacity. In other words, if your portfolio fell significantly, would it cause you to have to augment or change your lifestyle? Will you have to constrict your spending if your portfolio drops? Do you have to cut expenses if your portfolio drops? Will you have to change your lifestyle if your portfolio drops? Our hope is to design a plan where you won't have to do that, Chris. And one way to get around that or to create this risk capacity to invest is to begin with what we call the retirement allocation, the putting some money in bucket one or hull one, bucket two or hull two, and bucket three or hull three. There's four hulls or buckets in my practice. Bucket four, for those who don't know, is lifetime secure income. It's Social Security, pension, and income annuity. That bucket or hull, I usually use a hull analogy. I often say that hull is made out of kryptonite. Superman himself can't get through it. It doesn't matter if you run out of bucket one, bucket two, bucket three. They are not getting into bucket four. That is your Social Security, your pension, and your income annuity. And it is bucket four that is designed to maintain, Chris, our minimum dignity floor. Mm-hmm. Once that is set up, we now have to satisfy the variable spending in life. Not the minimum dignity floor. That is your minimum dignity floor are the expenses that if you don't cover, you're going to suffer an economic, financial, or medical hardship. By their very definition, they're nearly impossible to cut. They're your medical expenses. Yeah, you can get a cheaper Medigap policy, save a little money. They're your utilities. True, you can turn the thermostat down, stay a little colder, save a little money. But you can't stop paying your utility bill outright, or they're going to shut it off. You can't stop paying your property taxes or you're going to lose your house. Can't stop paying your mortgage or it's going to be foreclosed. So there's certain expenses, Chris, in that minimum dignity floor you can't cut. But what we're talking about now is trying to get this gentleman to understand once he takes care of all of these issues, now he's truly saying, okay, this is the money that I want to invest. The idea is to put into bucket one the amount of money he is going to need in cash that he is going to spend over the coming 2 to 5 year period. We let clients choose how much they want. Some like a lot in cash. It gives them more peace of mind. Others want to keep as minimum amount as possible. But the idea is the short-term spending, the next year or two, should be in cash. I agree, cash doesn't pay much, but so be it. It's going to be there irrespective of what happens. We wake up one day and there's been a terrorist attack or a war breaks out somewhere and the markets are being shocked and they're falling fast and you all of a sudden need $10,000 for some bills, you might be forced to sell in a down market. You don't want to do that. So bucket one is your immediate cash pool. Bucket two, listener, is a pool of money. How much is in bucket two depends on how much you put in bucket one. But let's just say you put 2 years of money in cash. So bucket two would be 8 years of spending. All totaled, we like 10 years in bucket one and two. That's our bullseye. But we're willing to go as low as 8 to as much as 12, depending on what clients want and what their finances are. Occasionally, we have people or we run into people who don't have enough money to put 8 years in reserve or 12 years or 10 years. They have to put far less. But the idea is to get them to hopefully have 8 to 12 years with a bullseye at about 10 in bucket one and two. What is bucket two? Bucket two is what we call principal protected. It can yield a little bit more than cash. But it could be a series of laddered CDs, which was the common thing when we were taught this at Boston University. That's what we used. But don't forget, I was studying at BU in the mid-90s when you could buy 7, 8, 9% yielding CDs. Mm-hmm. You don't get those anymore.
Nope.
But we were taught use a series of laddered CDs, some that mature in year 3, year 4, year 5. This is assuming they had 2 years in cash. So by the time the 2 years runs out, the 3 year CD is maturing. If they need it, they replace bucket one. If they don't need it, they go out on the ladder rung again and buy a longer term CD. But we used to do it with CDs. You can do it today with traditional fixed annuities. They're still in existence. You can't buy a 1 or a 2 year, but you can get 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 year fixed annuities that work very, very similar to CDs. So these are just some of the strategies, but bucket two should be principal protection. Excuse me. Bucket three is now your investments to the listener. To me, once he has bucket one and two set up, that's the risk capacity. So bucket three is his investments. And he can be far more aggressive when you put this retirement allocation in place, because he's also not telling me, is this all his money, some of his money? But you can be far more aggressive when you have this retirement allocation in place, because bucket three, in a worst case scenario, wouldn't be touched for 10 years. Assuming you had 10 years in bucket one and two, through a sound financial plan, you can make projections on what you're going to need for spending over that 10-year period, break it up into bucket one and two, so you can invest bucket three. That way, if the portfolio is down, You don't have to sell when it's down. You don't have to fall victim to reverse dollar cost averaging, or what academics call sequential risk. That is being forced to sell more shares because they're now down in price than you would have when your portfolio was up in price, leaving you far fewer shares to recover when the market recovers. The other important thing, excuse me, the other important thing to keep in mind with bucket three and two and one is you don't spend in that order, Chris. You don't spend from bucket one and then bucket two and then bucket three. What you actually do is treat bucket three like I treat my vegetable garden. I have a big vegetable garden. You know that. I could not get my peas to grow this year. So there's no peas for you. Oh, terrible year for my peas.
What?
I can't get them to grow. I don't know what the hell it is. But I used to have peas coming out of the yin yang. I mean, just tons and tons and tons of peas. This year, I couldn't get a pea started to save my life. My tomatoes are on fire. So are my squash and my green beans, but not the peas. Very disappointed. Coming in, but they're not ready till September. But anyways, I treat my vegetable garden. I don't go out there and just look at, oh, look how big my tomato plants are. This is great. They're growing and growing and growing. I actually harvest them. And that's what we want you to understand with bucket three. Think of it as your vegetable garden. You want it to grow. And when it grows, you're going to harvest the vegetables. And that's what you do with bucket three. So you have bucket one. And let's just say you had 2 years of cash in there. And you've spent it. And for most people, they might spend it in as little as a year and a half to as much as 2.5 years. They're never really exact at 2 years. But let's just say two and a half years into it, it needs to be replenished. Well, you don't just jump to bucket two now. You look at bucket three. If there are gains because it's been a very good 2 year period or 3 year period, guess what, Chris? You harvest some of those gains and you start taking some gains, but you can also set the portfolio up that dividends and interest being generated don't get reinvested. It actually feeds into bucket one. So when we do this, we have actual special portfolios that Travis, the chartered financial analyst who works for us, who designs our client portfolios, he has special retirement portfolios now that he's working on. And what he's going to do with them is the yield that comes out. And right now there's about a 3% yield, 3.2% dividend yield he's getting out of them. That dividend yield is not being reinvested. That feeds automatically when the investments pay dividends right into bucket one for the clients. So the dividends are feeding the cash bucket, maybe allowing what originally was a 2 year bucket to maybe last 2.5, 3, 3.5 years. But as that bucket begins to drain, we still have unrealized capital gain in there. That's some of what we harvest. So we harvest the interest and dividends by paying them right into bucket one, and we might harvest some capital gain. We might not. We might. It depends what the markets are doing, the economy is doing, what the client needs, what their tax situation is. So there's a lot of forethought we have to put into it. But does it make sense? Do you see how this bucketing works? The theory is, though, if bucket one ran dry, and there's no more interest in dividends, that's been used, and you need money, but the market is down, boom, you now have bucket two, which is principal protection. And bucket two will allow you to take from bucket two and feed bucket one without being forced to sell investments that are down, forcing you to fall victim to reverse dollar cost averaging, the fact that you have to sell more shares that are down in price than you would have when they were up in price, leaving you fewer shares. And if you set up this bucketing strategy with a dedicated income style portfolio as bucket three, and this doesn't mean a lot of bonds. The bucket three portfolios that we're working on is predominantly being driven by utilities, REITs, dividends, These have growth potential because you still want to grow bucket three for keeping pace with inflation. You need growth there. You have to sometimes be more aggressive in bucket three than you feel comfortable. That's risk tolerance. But when we show people you have the capacity, the risk capacity to take that risk, that even if that bucket dropped, you still have one and two, it makes people feel a little more comfortable investing in bucket three. That's really how I wanted to answer this email. I want him to, it's not so much what your bucket three is. It's to make sure you have this plan in place for a distribution portfolio. And pay attention to retirement allocation, not asset allocation. And retirement allocation is essentially asset allocation, I'll admit that. But we actually sometimes create three separate accounts for people to see that. There's the cash account. We tell them, you go open this at your bank. Here's the principal protected. Go open it at your bank in laddered CDs or at your insurance company in laddered fixed annuities. And then here is your bucket three. Go open this at your brokerage house. This is your investments. Three separate pools that people can now envision this whole concept. Do you think that explained things well to them or what?
I think so. And that's there are other similar approaches to this, but the nice thing about this is it keeps things quite structured and easy to visualize, which is another component of the of our recommendations in retirement planning specifically, that you have to remember in retirement, there's something that goes right along with retirement is you are going to age. And as you age, your mental capacity is going to be reduced, and or even just your desire to worry about complicated things is going to go down because you want to be out enjoying yourself and have a more simple life possibly than you had when it was maybe crazy and hectic in your 40s and 50s. So having something that is highly structured and easy to follow, most people appreciate that. There are other ways that you could accomplish a very similar outcome, honestly. There is other ways that might look very different, but they would be more complicated and not as clearly defined as what we're proposing. So I want to put that out there.
There's some that are called ceiling and floor, and you change your allocation based on how – it just gets so complicated. I can't see someone in their 70s and 80s even remembering this.
Right, right.
My approach – and our approach, rather, we try, as Chris said, to be simple and straightforward. But our listeners are smart. They're do-it-yourselfers. They're smart. Why else would they be listening to this? Once you create this risk capacity, folks, with bucket one and bucket two, can you see now what I mean? You can take a lot more risk in bucket three than you think. So many times people might be in a moderately aggressive or even aggressive portfolio. They retire and they think, okay, now I have to go conservative. Not really. You could still be moderately aggressive or aggressive. Just do a retirement allocation. Now, true, a purist would say, Jim, if you look at your bucket one and your bucket two and your bucket three and you look at them across, that probably is a moderately conservative portfolio. So why don't they just invest moderately conservatively? Because now everything is in one big...
Right. It's all munged together.
Yep. And they can't separate it.
Right.
And they panic when it's down.
Yep.
And... my way is you have, and again, I encourage people to have three separate accounts, and it just resonates with them. They understand it, and especially this new feeding portfolios, we call them, our growth-orientated dividend-paying portfolios to automatically be filling into bucket one. They see that cash coming out every year and going into the cash account to continue the spending, and it resonates. And then, of course, bucket two is sitting there. So if the portfolio is dropping in a down market, we'll probably stop sending out the dividends and the interest. Keep them inside. Don't let the portfolio drop too much. You're going to need those dividends reinvested. It's no different than vegetable gardening. I harvest some of my peas. Well, when I had them, I don't have them this year. But certain veggies, you can create your own seeds. Mm-hmm. Green beans and peas are phenomenal. Don't even try pumpkins and squashes. They get cross-pollinated, and you don't know what the hell is going to come out as a seed. The pumpkin looks normal, but the seed is all messed up. And you plant it in the ground, you're going to have some aborted thing coming out. You don't know what it is. So you just give up on those seeds. Those need to be purely pollinized at the seed farm or wherever they're going to grow them. But I grow my own pea seeds. I grow my own green bean seeds. So I don't consume everything. I save some. So the same thing with this Bucket 3 portfolio. If the market's down, you're going to shut off taking the interest and dividends from it. You're going to maintain that inside the portfolio, and you're going to spend from Bucket 2. That's my frozen vegetables. I still got some canned and frozen vegetables in the house, so if things fall through, I can go grab a can of peas.
How can you even stomach canned peas after you... fresh grown peas. There's not much worse than canned peas.
Yeah, but I like canned peas in my shepherd's pie.
Oh, if you hide them in something.
Yeah, you got to hide them in something. You don't just sit there and eat them.
Yeah. So after this break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 40 years ago as we look back to 1977. And this is the biggest hit for this sister singing group that used many elements from Earth, Wind, and Fire. So it's related to Earth, Wind, and Fire. It's not Earth, Wind, and Fire, but it's a
and they're
sister
an all
group.
Female,
it's sister? A sister singing group. That's your hint. So we'll find out who that is right after this short break.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is Best of My Love by The Emotions. It's the sister group. They take over the number one spot this week. Morris White and Al McKay of Earth, Wind, and Fire wrote this song specifically for them. The sisters Wanda, Sheila, and Pamela knew Maurice White. I guess it's Maurice, not Morris. Sorry. Maurice White from when they were first performed their girl group in Chicago as teenagers. So... little Earth, Wind, and Fire connection there, but it's sisters.
Perfect.
Very recognizable song.
And for those who don't know, Chris will explain at the next segment.
I will.
Yeah, you will. Why we do a song from 1935, a song from 40 years ago, and a song from 35 years ago.
I will.
But this.
Oops. Sorry. I bumped the mouse.
Still playing.
Still playing it.
But there is a Social Security connection to this, and that's coming up in the next
segment.
Yeah,
who would have known The Emotions singing Best of My Love somehow connects to Social Security?
But it does.
It does.
In our world, in our little world. Mm-hmm. But welcome back, folks. This is the third segment of the Retirement and IRA Show. We have another email question that we're going to get to. Before we begin, a little bit of house cleaning. Is it keeping or cleaning?
Justin, what do you think?
I'd say housekeeping.
Yep.
Is that what I said?
No. Oh. You were cleaning again.
Okay. So those who don't
know... cleaning is a form of housekeeping, though, so...
True. So it all means the same.
Yeah. Well, no.
But for those who can't tell, Junior has officially entered the room, otherwise known as Justin Fundalinski. Mm-hmm. He is an associate planner here at Jim Saulnier Associates. His specialty is taxes and long-term care. And we brought him in because we have a long-term care question, long-term care insurance question.
Very nice.
And yours truly, that would be me, will not be here after this segment. I have to head home. My very, very old dog will be 13 years in a couple of weeks. Chesapeake Bay Retriever is not doing too good, so I have a vet coming out to take a look at him and see if, make sure little guy's still going to hang in there and is not...
Little guy? It's like 80 pounds, isn't he?
Yeah, but compared to Mosby, who was 100, he's little guy, so that's been okay. His nickname.
Okay. It's like little Junior over here?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's little guy.
Okay.
Compared to Mosby, he's little.
True.
I guess now I should be calling him big guy because Mosby died a little while ago. But he answers.
Long while ago.
He answers to little guy. He still comes. Hey,
I didn't realize he was so much younger than Mosby, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I got him when Mo was 8.
Mm.
So much, much younger. But anyways, little guy isn't doing too well. He's had a rough couple of weeks, so I have a doctor coming out to take a look at him. Hopefully he'll still be with me, but his days are probably short. At 13, that's like 93 in people years, I think.
Especially for those big dogs.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's the hips, the knees.
Right? Everything on him is going, even the eyes. Sometimes I'm right in front of him and he can't see me. I'll whistle and he's looking around for me. And I'm like, dude, look up. But he's still a great dog, so I got a vet coming out. That's what's cool now. They got so many of those travel vets. You don't have to take the dog to the vet anymore. They come right to you. Okay, so I won't be here in the next segment, but I do want to encourage our listeners, iTunians and local Coloradoans. If you have any questions like these emailers had, please don't hesitate to email us. I want to give another apology to our New Hampshireite who did email us, an iTunian from New Hampshire. I don't believe we answered your question yet. I could be mistaken, but I don't believe we did, and I cannot find your email, and they're all been deleted and all this other... You know, all that stuff, Justin, I had with my email. So I can't find this email, and I don't remember if I answered it or not. But outside of that slight muff-up, anybody else who has any questions, we'll be happy to try to answer them on the radio. You can go to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Click on the Contact Us button, and you can send us an email that way. Or you can do it the old-fashioned way. Just address it to Jim@JimHelps.com or Chris@JimHelps.com or even Justin@JimHelps.com. All of us will get the email and share it with everyone. But if you have any email questions, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Okay. So let me read this email, Justin. I'm going to let you do most of the answering since you are the go-to person on long-term care. But it's a very, very good question. I think a lot of listeners will find this interesting. And there's a lot of moving parts to this. Again, a simple email that we can turn into a rather interesting answer. So it begins, and as luck would have it, he must know you do long-term care, Justin, because it's begins. Actually, this is terrible. He begins with Chris.
Oh, that's not terrible. That's exquisite.
So it begins, Chris. I'm sandwiched in the middle. Jim and Justin.
He did him in alphabetical order.
Yeah, alphabetical.
Oh, that could be what he did.
Could be. Could be order of importance.
I'd at least make the middle. Okay. I don't know.
Go ahead, Jim. What's the question?
I was thinking of a wise retort, and I couldn't think of one, of why your name would be first. I was going to say maybe he did it by weight. Actually, he probably did do it by weight.
He'd do it by weight.
Yeah. That would put you first, me second, Junior third.
Or quantity of hair in reverse order.
Yeah. In reverse order. You're saying he probably has more hair than me because he's younger.
Yeah, you're losing
he's
some
starting
hair.
To, yeah.
But I'm going to go ahead and say he did this by weight. Chris, Jim, and Justin.
Weight of importance.
I'm more substantial than either the other two.
Okay. I listen to your podcast and appreciate the information you provide. While maybe a little late to the game, my wife and I are exploring options for long-term care insurance. I am 58 and my wife is 56. One of the options we are exploring is life insurance with a long-term care rider. For those listeners who don't understand, a rider is an option that you can add to a life insurance policy. Most cost a little extra, but some riders are free. and you will pay Oregon. It would be free, and it can take a life insurance policy and add some options to it. In this particular case, it's a life insurance policy with an option to access the death benefit via this rider to use for long-term care. So that's what a rider is. Our existing life insurance policies, which are about 18 years old, are variable universal life with significant cash value. $35,000 in my wife's policy and $88,000 in my policy. We are exploring transferring the cash value into a new variable universal life policy, but this time with the addition of a long-term care insurance rider. Now, 18 years ago when they bought these policies, they probably didn't have long-term care riders available. So that's why they're being recommended to replace this policy for another policy. The rider will allow for use of up to half the face value of the policy for long-term care requirements, with the death benefit reduced by any money paid out for long-term care. So that's what he is hoping for, and he has several questions. Do you have any experience with this policy, this type of policy? What is your opinion of life insurance with a rider to cover long-term care? We have been told due to longevity, women will have a higher chance of needing long-term care insurance than men. Should we consider long-term care for my wife only? Besides long-term care insurance, do you have any ideas on how to cover long-term care costs? And at what point should we consider self-insurance, if at all? Self-insurance being, folks, they pay for some of the cost of long-term care. We look forward to discussing this important topic on an upcoming podcast. Regards, and he put his name, but as always, we are going to call him George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Okay, I thought that was an excellent question, Justin, don't you?
Series of questions.
Yeah, series of questions here. It's going to really cover a gambit of information here. So
there's a lot to go over there. So I'm going to let you begin with some of the ideas we had.
Well, let's just go down the list. Question number one was, do we have any experience with this type of policy? Yes and no. We've done a lot of reviews of policies such as this. We have wholesalers that come in and talk to us about it. We also review policies that current clients or potential clients have to, you know, inform them of what they actually have, because a lot of times they don't know all the embedded rules and regulations within these policies. So we have experience in that sense. I don't think we've actually ever sold a policy like that, have we?
No, we haven't, and that's mostly because I personally am not a fan of them.
Okay.
And to me, if you want life insurance, you get life insurance. You want long-term care insurance, you get long-term care insurance. These policies are trying to do a little too much, but they don't do either one then very good. That's my take. But also, the fine print. You have to be very careful on a VUL. This is a variable universal life he's talking about. So that's a policy, as you probably know, Justin, that the return of the investments inside that policy, a variable universal life, is where the cash value gets to be invested into these accounts that are very similar to mutual funds, but they're not really mutual funds. Before I forget, Chris, you're going to have to read our disclosure. Do you have it handy? Because I said mutual fund and variable.
Since
so read the full
it?
One, the full one with the annuity, the contract. And
well,
do you have that there?
No.
we'll find the full one.
Okay.
So Chris will
read
you.
You told me I didn't need it anymore.
Well, I said you're going to need it if I ever mentioned something variable, and here we are variable.
Here we are variableizing.
Okay, Chris is going
killing me.
Chris is going to get the important disclosure he has to read to you to protect you. But that's because we're mentioning Variable Universal Life, which is a product regulated by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. The key with VUL policies, and I have to confess I am not a fan of VULs, and they have really fallen out of favor. The problem with VULs, Justin, is the entire policy's performance is tied to a certain rate of return that the cash value is going to earn.
Mm-hmm.
And if he starts debiting from this cash value, he's allowed to take half out for long-term care. If he starts debiting from that cash value, that leaves less cash value to grow to keep the policy from lapsing, because the policy has to perform at certain levels. So as he starts taking cash value out, there will be less cash value in there to maintain the policy. And it could force a position where he may have to pump more premiums in, or the policy may lapse. That's one of the issues you have with VULs, and trying to put a rider on to allow you to start taking policy death benefits out early. But a policy that is being impacted by cash value, you have to be careful as you take it out. So I do worry that that policy might blow up unless, and maybe there is, but I've never heard of them, that there's some sort of protection built in, that if you are taking a benefit out, you are borrowing from that or reducing down the cash value, maybe the policy will be exempt from that and be able to maintain itself. I would just be very careful. And now I know on this one, it's also an advancement of death benefit, he said on his, but I have seen some that are designed to take from cash value.
Or reduce cash value proportionately is what we often see. So
correct.
If you're taking a large part of this advanced death benefit, it's going to proportionally reduce that cash value, and you may later not be able to fund the premiums for that
we
policy.
We saw that on a whole life policy. Yes. We analyzed for someone.
Mm-hmm.
They were giving them an advancement of death benefit like this one, not really access to cash value, because you can borrow that at any time. What I was trying to explain is, as he takes his death benefit early, if it is tied to cash value, which it is, and it reduces it, the cash value could drop to such a level that it can't support the policy, and you're faced with an issue in the future. But the policy that Justin reviewed, as he looked at it and actually read it and crunched the numbers, it was reducing the cash value greater than it was reducing the death benefit.
Yes, yes, it was. Mm.
Because of the way the math was done.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to watch out for this, listener. The nuances of these policies, the salesmen who sell them make them sound really good. But when you understand what happens if you actually start using the benefit, and the reduction of the death benefit, which can reduce the cash value, which is needed strongly in a VUL to make sure the policy is being maintained. And I would also ask the agent who recommended this to you, what rate of return are they assuming on the cash value? And are they assuming a 5, 6, 7% rate of return? Or God forbid, even more, they can go up to 12? Or are they assuming a 1, 2, or 3, which I would feel a little more comfortable on, than a higher rate of return? But if they're assuming a 7% rate of return on full cash value, and then you start taking death benefit earlier and it reduces the cash value, and you need to still earn this high rate of return, you may not. That's, in a nutshell, why I don't like these policies. They're too complex. Keep it simple.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, is just the complexity of them. But another side of the thing is, a lot of times what we've seen is these long-term care riders are not necessarily long-term care riders. They might be a chronic illness rider. And oftentimes people will get confused between the two of them, even though it may be clearly labeled as a chronic illness rider, because the actual events that will trigger that chronic illness rider are those that are set forth by HIPAA guidelines for an LTC benefit. So 2 of 6 ADLs, activity is daily living that you can't do, or severe cognitive impairment, that would trigger a chronic illness benefit But it's really not an LTC benefit.
But is by law, it couldn't have been explained to him as an LTC rider, right? A chronic illness rider can't. The agent's not supposed to call it.
No,
a long-term care.
They have to call it what it is. But I think, you know, he said, she said. Look at the contract.
So we're just saying a little bit of caution here.
Yep. And there's a big difference between the two of them. It's a different tax filings with from the insurance company to the IRS on how that benefit is paid out. So and how you will be entitled to get it. So typically a chronic illness rider is essentially you get something, you're never going to recover from it. That's when it's going to pay out. But you might have to meet up with, you know, two of six ADLs and, you know, a cognitive impairment. The long-term care rider is you could actually recover from a long-term care event. Say you had a massive car accident, you're in a wheelchair for 2 years, it could pay out for that period of time, and then you recover and you no longer qualify for it, but you got paid during that period of time. So little differences there. They're subtle, but it could certainly make a big difference if you needed it.
Another thing I want you to talk about, Justin, with this gentleman's question, is what you and I chatted about. What's the goal here? What does he need? Why is he tying it to life insurance?
That's I think, you know, number two. What is your opinion of life insurance with a rider to cover long-term care? I can't say I'm a big fan of it. I think we need to look at their goals. You know, if their goals are to have life insurance as well as long-term care, maybe we look at that. But, you know, if you want to get the most bang for your buck for life insurance, buy pure life insurance.
Well, if you need life insurance and you put this rider on, your death benefit is going to be reduced.
Yep.
So if you need a certain minimum amount of death benefit and you tied that to a long-term care benefit and use the long-term care, you won't have the death benefit.
So there goes that planning out the window,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's I would encourage this listener to be certain him and his wife need life insurance.
It's typically, you know, as we see in many retirement cases, that clients don't necessarily need life insurance as they age. What's the purpose of it? There are obviously planning aspects to it that we have often recommended, but it's not like we're out there recommending life insurance to every retiree. That's just crazy. So
exactly.
Let's find out if you really need life insurance. That would be my first step. And if you don't, then maybe a pure long-term care policy or a hybrid life insurance policy rather than a rider life insurance policy might buy you more long-term care.
Again, what I often say, listeners, in your younger years, your 20s, 30s, 40s, even early 50s, as you have a family that's dependent on you, you still have to send the kids to school. You have to do all these kid things that Justin and Chris are doing with their kids.
Pay the mortgage.
You have responsibilities. But there comes a point in your life where dying too early is no longer a financial risk. Living too long is. And there's a switch where you start to evolve. And it's going to be a point in time where the biggest financial risk isn't dying in retirement. It's living too long and consuming assets to take care of you because you may have developed dementia or Alzheimer's or had a stroke or you're just aging and you can no longer take care of yourself. But medical science is keeping us alive longer and longer. But now you're starting to consume money again. You're hurting the family unit financially because you need to hire people to come take care of you. So I often tell people, dying too soon isn't the issue in retirement. Living too long is. So we have to assume this listener has a need for life insurance, but I'm also wondering, do they really? Or do they just happen to go to an insurance agent who isn't licensed, Justin, to actually sell long-term care, but they can sell one of these insurance riders? So his solution is, let's just get rid of this old VUL that you paid into for 18 years, go into this new VUL, and I can have a long-term care rider if you need it. If you just need long-term care insurance, if you are worried about living too long and burdening the other spouse who has to now financially take care of you, I would look at a pure long-term care policy or, as Justin said, a hybrid life insurance policy that truly these hybrids were created after the 2006 Pension Protection Act that allowed the advancement of a death benefit tax-free for long-term care. Mm-hmm. That's where you saw these riders come out that this listener is talking about, and these hybrid policies. We talk often about the Pacific Life one that we have talked about on the show previously. But these hybrids, of which Justin will explain, really have just enough life insurance, Justin, to make them life insurance.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I just want to go back on one thing. Maybe when would we use a life insurance policy with a long-term care rider? I can't argue this one. Sometimes you just can't get long-term care coverage. It's a whole different standard of underwriting. So whether they're insuring your life or they're insuring the possibility that you could linger in a long-term care situation are two very different things. Now, some insurance companies with the riders will have some sort of underwriting for long-term care, but a lot of them don't. So you could just go through life insurance underwriting and potentially get a long-term care benefit that you wouldn't have access to otherwise. So there is a possibility where we would consider that.
But they never indicated to us they were unable to get
traditional long-term care. I'm just throwing out our opinions.
And they weren't of the age where you typically really worry about that unless there's some kind of significant pre-existing condition.
Right, exactly. So, excellent. And you wanted me to start going on hybrids a little bit just to...
Well, what I want to explain to them is because they do have cash value. He mentioned the significant cash value.
Mm-hmm.
This can be used. You don't have to transfer it, listener, just into another variable universal life policy. For those listeners who don't know, cash value inside a life insurance policy can be accessed. You can borrow it, but we're not recommending that in this situation. You can close the policy, take out the cash value, and it's tax-free up to all premiums paid on the policy. Mm-hmm. He has 38,001,
$35,000 and $88,000.
So on the $35,000 policy, if he's paid in 40, 100% of that is tax free. If he's paid in 30, 5,000 is taxable. The rest is tax free. When we come back, I won't be here, but Justin will be. Carry on with this conversation, Justin. Explain that the cash value doesn't have to just be transferred to another VUL. Mm-hmm. He can actually transfer to a long-term care policy.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be the better option. And also, because the wife may need more coverage, how he may want to transfer the wife's cash value, take out of his cash value up to the whole premiums put in, and then transfer the rest of the cash value. So we could talk about
Absolutely.
Some of that.
Absolutely.
Okay. When we come back from this short break, I'll read you the disclaimer, since we're talking about some
variable
out of the ordinary things that we don't normally touch on here. We'll also hear one of the top songs from back in 1982. The number one song is still Eye of the Tiger, so we're not going to hear that. But we're going to hear another popular song from 1982 from an artist who was told that he couldn't use his regular name because he would never sell a record. We'll find out who that is right after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is, of course, John Cougar Mellencamp. It was originally John Mellencamp, but they told him that's not going to work. They had something against Mellencamp. I'm not sure why. So it was John Cougar for a while. Then he decided to bring back the Mellencamp. He was John Cougar Mellencamp for a while, and now we all just call him John Mellencamp.
That's how I know him, yeah.
Mother gave him that name, I believe.
Or his father?
Well,
or his mother?
His mother didn't add the cougar in there, so he removed the non-motherly name that was in the middle there.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. Oh.
You have something?
I do.
Something to read to us right now?
Yes. Since we're talking about VULs, variable universal life policies, a variable policy, we have an additional disclaimer we need to read that is required of this broadcast. So here we go. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than the original cost. So that's the fabulous disclaimer we have to read whenever we talk about either mutual funds or variable insurance products.
Well, at least you can talk about them.
Now we can at least talk about them just with that little disclaimer. So
everybody awake?
We're kind of in the we're kind of in the middle of that. Actually, there's one other piece of housekeeping that we have to cover.
Oh.
I have to explain why we listen to the songs that we listen to. We've listened to a song from 1935, a song from 1977, and a song from 1982. And John, I'm seriously being affected by
just
by Jim,
the aura of Jim,
yeah, something. Yeah. So
say as anonymity.
As Jim said before, these all, strangely enough, have some connection to Social Security. And the 1935 song, of course, I already mentioned to you, that was the year that Social Security started. 1977 is 40 years ago, and that connects, or at least is a reference to, or in honor of, the 40 elapsed years that is referred to in the Social Security benefit calculation. 1982 is 35 years, which is paying homage to the 35 computational years, which are the actual earnings years that are used in the financial or the mathematical computation of your average indexed monthly earnings, which leads us through another formula to your PIA, your primary insurance amount, which is the retirement benefit at your full retirement age. And that's how all these strange songs, these top songs from the past 82 years, 40 years, and 35 years connect to Social Security. And this is all done as our lead up to what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So this week on our blog post, those of you who are maybe unaware, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com is a blog that Jim and I do, mostly I do, that talks about Social Security rules, regulations, tips, strategies sometimes on there. So it's your home for all things Social Security. But we had an emailed question about Social Security that I answered this week on the blog. And the questions were essentially about how to estimate your retirement benefit, particularly if you are young. Social Security provides a benefit estimate if you look at your Social Security statement or you log on to your Social Security account at ssa.gov. And he had questions of, well, if I'm 30 years old, I've only been paying in for maybe 10 years, what assumptions are they making through the rest of my working career that would lead me to their benefit estimate? Are they assuming I'm going to continue making what I'm making now? Do they inflate it? What exactly are they using in order to project for me some benefit that may be another 35 years away? So I answer these questions. There are answers to these questions. But to find out the answer, you'll have to go to helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat?
A little tease there, huh?
That was a big tease this time. But I wanted to get back to what we were talking about, so we had enough time.
Agreed, agreed. So Jim's gone now. He left off mentioning hybrid long-term care / life insurance policies,
which are becoming more and more popular now.
Very, very, very popular.
And one thing that we hadn't mentioned that I think might play a part in these products being pitched and reviewed by people more often, there's a lot of insurance companies that in the past had vastly underestimated the cost of paying out long-term care benefits and have chosen to exit the long-term care insurance business altogether. Mm-hmm. So finding pure long-term care policies has become more difficult.
Those traditional
and
policies,
with less yeah. competition out there. So we're seeing these alternative options, which mm-hmm. might be life insurance with a rider, as you mentioned, or these hybrid policies, which
really are exactly that, but mm-hmm. they are designed specifically for long-term care. So it's built entirely on a life insurance chassis. It gives you the absolute minimum amount of life insurance to make it a life insurance policy. But there is a rider linked to it. They also call them linked benefits. You cannot unlink this benefit. It's the whole purpose of this policy. And it's designed to just really leverage in a long-term care scenario rather than in a death scenario. So it's a very different type of life insurance because they're not really insuring your life very much. They're just putting a long-term care policy in a life insurance wrapper.
And for reasons beyond the scope of this conversation, this style of policy is more attractive to insurance companies or to some that are offering them rather than offering pure long-term care policies.
Yeah.
So we're seeing these, and that's good because I was actually quite worried for some time as I saw insurance companies bailing out of the LTC policy business that it would kind of dry up and people just wouldn't have this option anymore. And as you well know, Justin, and hopefully our listeners do if they've listened for any length of time, long-term care issues, health issues in retirement can absolutely devastate your ability to maintain your financial well-being.
Big stressor in that retirement plan. Yeah,
so this
absolutely.
Is definitely something that many people look to that's a risk that you can offload to an insurance company, which is what you're doing when you buy an insurance policy.
Exactly. So Jim brought that up for a specific reason because it sounds like George here, our emailer, was looking to move some of the cash value that was either in his wife's policy or his policy into funding long-term care. So because these are life insurance policies, just like he's looking at another VUL as an option, he could also 1035 exchange this into one of these long-term care policies that have a life insurance wrapper. So it would give him a lot more leverage on the long-term care side. So that's why Jim brought those types of policies up rather than the traditional ones. But, you know, what we want to do is see, I guess, how much could he buy with the amount of cash value he has? Would he have to fund it in different ways to make it happen? And to answer one of his questions, we have been told that due to longevity in women that there's a higher chance of them needing long-term care. His situation with $35,000 in his wife's policy and his having more at 88, how could he fund or 1035 exchange over into these policies to maybe get a larger benefit for her? So what Jim was getting at there is, one, you can access your cash value up until the principal that you put into it tax-free.
Right. So all the premiums that you've paid in,
yep.
that amount can be withdrawn from this type of policy, and there's no tax implication. Essentially, the IRS looks at it as they're just giving you back your own money.
And that money comes out first. Mm-hmm. So that's a unique thing about cash value and life insurance policy is that money comes out first. You don't have to take out the earnings first. So they're receiving their premiums back. So they could certainly access some of those premiums from his policy, receive them in cash tax-free, and then allocate them towards his wife's policy to maybe buy her a larger benefit, mm-hmm. and then also 1035 exchange her value into that policy to build onto
that. So if her cash value that she had wasn't enough mm-hmm. to get the level of long-term care coverage that they felt that she needed, then it could be through this method of, it's not going to be a direct, you can't take it and move it, especially via 1035, mm-hmm. since those are his assets and that violates, 1035 is a lifetime
exactly.
kind
yep.
of exchange. Mm-hmm. So you've got to get it out. But once you get it to cash, it's in your pocket.
You can
spend
whatever you want.
You can do whatever you want with it. So if you choose then to take your cash, in this case, the husband's cash that he's taken out of his life insurance policy, and use it to buy LTC coverage for his wife, he has every right to do so, and that could be a way to kind of shift some of that over to her.
Exactly, exactly. So that's where Jim was going on that, and he just wanted to make sure that we covered that. The next question that George had was, besides long-term care insurance, do you have any ideas how to cover long-term care costs? And you know what? I'm going to reverse out, back out of here. One of the questions that he followed up on number three was, should we consider long-term care for his wife only? That's a tough call. I wouldn't say yes or no to that. I think it's a matter of how much risk you want to insure from a statistical standpoint. You know, if you go to a nursing home today, just go to anyone. Generally, about 90% of the people in it are women. And long-term care companies obviously have recognized this. They charge more for long-term care insurance for women. But, you know, I'd say we see a lot of people that don't want to, you know, the man is likely to need it first because of their longevity issues. It depends on age, of course. But, you know, they don't want to burden their family or their wife with the potential of having to take care of them in that scenario. So, you know, having something in place could certainly help. So I don't want to say yes or no to that one. It's going to be a personal feeling on that of what you do want to insure.
That and what the premiums turned out to be, which will be revealed during the underwriting phase, because it will depend on the health history of the two and the ages of the two.
Actually, with these hybrids, because we're on that topic.
Oh, if we're talking about hybrids.
It's pretty much priced based on your age. So you could tell me, I'm a woman that's 53 years old, what would be my cost? And I could tell you that pretty easily. So.
Yeah, traditional long-term care insurance. They have tiers,
yeah. Right. So, but not as vast as life insurance. Yeah. It's more of, they might have, well, you're a good risk, a medium risk, or a bad risk, and that's how we price it. So it's not 7 to 20 different tiers of underwriting, which life insurance has. Yeah. So. All right, back to the next one, which was, do you have any ideas of how to cover long-term cost aside from long-term care insurance? I think this really ties into question five also, which Jim read, was, should we consider self-insurance at all? Really, the only other ways that you can cover long-term care costs would be either A, through self-insurance, or B, Medicaid.
Right.
So depending on your asset level, you know, if you don't have very many assets, then Medicaid may be an option for you. It's certainly not something you want to strive for.
I was going to say, it's not when you say an option, that almost sounds like you're choosing that. Or what you're really choosing is not to buy any insurance coverage for long-term care, hoping you don't need it. But in the case that you do, you might find yourself in a financial situation where Medicaid then kicks in. But that financial situation is not attractive nor something that most people would strive to obtain.
No, I wouldn't say you strive for it, but we have actually had a recent case where clients would not qualify for long-term care. And the question was, you know, do we self-insure this or do you accept Medicaid? And, you know, they had moved towards the idea where we'd rather live our lives while we can and have fun with the money that we have. And if Medicaid is our only option, we'll deal with it.
Right. So what they chose to do, just to decode that maybe for people thinking, how does this affect my life?
Mm-hmm.
You could hoard your money, saving it off to the side in preparation for covering long-term care expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're doing that, you're not spending it,
mm-hmm.
thus enjoying the things that could come from spending it. What they're saying is, we're not going to self-insure in that, you know, in that way. We're not going to hoard it and set it off to the side. We're actually going to spend this down knowing that the fallback position isn't tapping that resource that I've got hoarded off to the side, but rather fall back on Medicaid if, in fact, I need that, which Medicaid will cover long-term care, but only if you are in a dire financial situation, essentially. You do have some resources, and your spouse has the ability to retain some resources, but it is
minimal at best.
Minimal.
So they have an asset test and an income test,
right.
And the asset test for the community spouse is pretty low. It's just above $100,000, I believe. I'd have to reference those numbers. And the income test, essentially, I think, What do you get, $20 a month on that one? It's very low.
I haven't looked at it long enough. Jan Lord, who Jim mentioned we should have back in, is our resident expert on those sorts of things.
Either way, it's very low.
It's very low. It's, again, when I mentioned it's not something you want to really aim for or say, oh, yes, this is what I want to do. It's really what they were saying is it's something we've accepted that could be worst case scenario.
Yeah.
That could be a place where we find ourselves. But prior to that, we're going to enjoy our lives and create memories and create memories maybe with our grandchildren and all those sorts of things. And the price you pay for that is maybe having to accept the level of long-term care provided in a Medicaid situation. And I'd say that can be a rational choice.
Yeah.
That could be something that as long as you research and you understand what that is and you've decided, yes, this would be okay in exchange for us having the freedom to spend in our what Jim always calls the go-go years, right? When you are retired but you're
having fun.
Hopefully not having significant health issues and you're definitely not in the LTC, long-term care box yet. That might be a bad phrase. But
yeah.
The box comes after the long-term care, right?
The small nursing home box.
Right, exactly. Yes. That might be absolutely a rational choice
for
some people to make.
I just want to throw out something to think about is, it's a government program sponsored by both federal and state. It could potentially be underfunded at some point in time. It may have higher and harder requirements to get it. It may just fall off the face of this earth. So you take that risk on when you make that decision. So we don't know what the future of anything is, let alone our own healthcare tomorrow.
Kind of like the benefits are dependent upon the claims paying ability of the insurance company.
Yeah.
The Medicaid is based on the claims paying ability and willingness and choices of the government.
Exactly.
Since that is a government sponsored.
So good luck. I wish you the best, but no, it's something to think about. So self-insurance, let's talk about that. I think there's something everyone should self-insure. You should never, ever, ever fully insure the risk of long-term care unless you can guarantee that you're going to have a long-term care need. I just can't see that ever happening. So self-insurance comes from many different facets. Typically, when you have a long-term care scenario, let's just assume an individual, no spouse, their expenses are reduced significantly. They can sell their home. They can. They won't be feeding themselves because they'll be at the nursing home and someone will be feeding them there. They won't have power at their home. They won't have taxes in that sense to cover their home. So their expenses reduce substantially from that perspective, and they can allocate the funds that they were spending on that towards long-term care. So they can use their income. They can also access equity within their home to self-insure. They can use assets to self-insure. Also, when you have a long-term care event, you have massive medical expenses. So your tax bill goes down substantially, which may free up cash flow for you again. So there's lots of things to think about there. So finding out how much you should insure is the hard part. Whether you should self-insure and insure at the same time, probably. It's a good idea. Most people need it. But how much between the two of them? You need to meet in the middle somewhere, maybe towards one end or the other. But a good cash flow projection that considers the fact that your expenses will reduce in one area, they'll increase in the medical side, which increases your tax deductions, and what assets you have and income that you can allocate towards it, that's how you should look at it. So I definitely think you should self-insure. You absolutely do not want to fully insure it. That's just crazy unless you absolutely know you're going to need it. So,
well, for most people, fully insured means over-insured.
Yes, that's what it means.
Because it results in much higher premiums overall that you're paying. And that's the bottom line what Justin was getting at, is that when you fully insure so that every dime is possibly covered, first of all, it's kind of difficult to do so, especially when you're insuring an unknown expense.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know exactly what
we
the long-term...
We certainly don't know. Yeah.
We don't know exactly what it's going to be. So,
Right.
You've got that. The other thing I was, you mentioned, you know, you don't have the house, you don't have the power. That was a single individual, right. though, right?
Right.
The scenario is much more complicated when you have a spouse.
Absolutely.
And the sad stories, of course, are the, you go into long-term care, draining the financial resources of the couple, the married mm-hmm. couple, because mm-hmm. the government expects you, before Medicaid will kick in, that the spouse has a responsibility to financially support the needs of the person that's having the long-term care issues. And that could take them from a very substantial financial situation to a very precarious financial situation. And then you pass away. So your parting gift is to leave your spouse nearly destitute
yep.
as far as financial resources go.
Yep.
So
you got to play the numbers a little bit.
Right.
You got to play the numbers. I mean, you can look at many different scenarios. You got to play the odds a little bit. You look at, most women go into nursing homes. You know, at a nursing home, it's made up of 90% women. So let's look at that scenario where George passes first and maybe needs long-term care, and Georgette is a community spouse. And then let's look at her in a, she's single at this point in time or widowed, and she goes in and needs long-term care. And let's reverse that. And you got to make a decision. You know, you can find out how much or about how much should you insure. How much should you self-insure in each scenario? But what scenario are you most comfortable with insuring? Because you can't insure them all. You know, I guess you could if you just over-insured yourself, but that'd True. Be very, very, very True. Expensive.
So we've got less than 2 minutes here. So why don't you? I don't know. Did you have anything else you wanted to wrap up here? Or if we could maybe summarize the.
Yeah,
the major options of a LTC policy.
Yeah, yeah. So, and just to finalize that, I guess we've talked about long-term care with a insurance policy that is a rider on it, which Jim, you can see, and a little bit me too. I'm on that same boat. Not too big of fans of that. You really want to decide whether you need long-term care or you need life insurance, or if you need both, does it make sense to have different policies so you get leverage in both and one doesn't affect the other. There is hybrid policies or linked benefit policies, which are pretty much exactly the same, but they are built to leverage the long-term care more, quite a bit actually. The leverage is very similar to traditional long-term care. And then we also have, which we didn't get into, traditional policies, which could be used in this case. I suppose they could take their cash benefit out and use it to start funding premiums towards a long-term care policy. But
long-term care policies still do exist. I mentioned that lot of companies were bailing out of it, but there's still participants.
There's some good carriers out there. I can think of one that's really great. We have used them in the past, and another that is mediocre, but they're getting better financially. So we're always looking at other insurance companies. Absolutely.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks for coming in, Justin. If anybody has any questions on this topic or others that we cover here on the Retirement and IRA Show, please reach out to us. You can go to our website. JimHelps.com is the shortest version of the website. We have a few domain names, but JimHelps.com. You can send an email directly to Jim. Jim@JimHelps.com. Pretty easy to remember. And as long as he doesn't lose the email, in the meantime, we will happily answer your question right here on the radio show. So thanks a lot for listening. We will be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit JimHelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.